Okay, let's turn to Numbers chapter 20. I'm going to talk about a sin that we don't like to talk about. It's rarely discussed in the church. Normally not seen. It's more of a hidden thing. But yet it can be very devastating. And the sin I'm going to talk about is the sin of anger. I know you men don't deal with that, but you'll have neighbors and people you work with that I think can be very helpful to take these notes. Well, I'm going to talk about one of the greatest leaders in the Scripture, and by far the greatest leader in the Old Testament, that is Moses. Think of Moses, who chose rather to suffer affliction with the people of God than to enjoy the pleasures of sin for a season. Think of Moses, who could have been the next Pharaoh, and yet he made a choice of how he was going to live his life and how he was going to direct his life, and was given the assignment by God to take the children of Israel from Egypt to Canaan, a place they didn't want to leave, to a place they didn't want to go. And it wasn't just like a Sunday school picnic. It was 600,000 fighting men, which meant there were probably at least 600,000 fighting women, and maybe 2 million screaming kids. No small task. And you see, when they got to a point, Moses continued to lead and to guide and patiently deal with them. And now we find in Numbers chapter 20, that came to children of Israel, even the whole congregation, into the desert of Zin. In the first month, and the people abode in Kadesh, and Miriam died there and was buried. So first thing I want to look at in this context is one of the causes of his anger. And it was personal pain. Now, who was Miriam in relationship to Moses? His sister. What role did she play in his life? The basket when he was a baby to preserve the life. Old, typical older sister, critical of who he wanted to date. You remember that whole scenario? Stopped the movement of God for a while. But there was a close relationship there, and Miriam died. Personal pain. And you stop to look at life or life of someone with whom you're working or helping, or maybe a family member, and there's some personal pain in the life. You'd be amazed at how many people are sitting in church Sunday morning, nicely dressed, smiling, singing, and angry at God. But they could not admit it, because they would fear rejection. They could not say, like Asaph in Psalm 77, Psalm 73, they could not say, as Asaph would go and question, God, what are you doing? What? Because fear of rejection. I preached one night, topic of anger, at a church on a Sunday night, and before I was even done preaching, the pianist in the church came from a pew on that side. She came to the steps of the platform weeping, sobbing, as I was finishing the message. After I dismissed, I went to her and I said, I don't know what you're dealing with, but one thing you know for sure, God loves you with a perfect love. Monday night, my wife and I got there, and she had a 3-page handwritten note to me. I didn't bring it with me in my anger file, but the essence of it was, said, when you started preaching Sunday night and God revealed to me that I had been angry at him, She said, my husband and I have not been able to have children. And I would sit in church and I would see families with their children. And I would see women with their kids and with their grandkids. And I was getting more and more angry. But she said, no one would have suspected. I've been a pianist here for a long time. My husband and I are very faithful members. She said, but I've been angry with God. She said, I got in the middle of that message, and that's when she burst out, literally under such conviction. She was sobbing there alone on the steps of the platform. And she said, I went to my family and asked forgiveness because I would snap at them. Said she was a writer for one of the big newspapers. She said, I went to work and asked forgiveness of them because I had gotten in on their griping and murmuring. And she said, I ask God's forgiveness. And here we find that many, 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 many people sit there regularly, faithfully, nicely dressed, yet angry at God. That anger then begins to show itself in other areas. I was doing a men's conference out in the Teton Mountains at a camp up in Wyoming, and owner of a construction company from Colorado came to me and said, I brought a man with me. He works for my construction company. He's not saved. I paid for his way, and I paid his 2 days, Thursday and Friday, off work. I paid for those 2 days as well, but he's here. He's not saved. So just be aware of that. And I'd notice Bill, when I'd preach, he'd sit against the back wall and he would not look. And then the session I did before my final session, the owner of the construction company came and said, you know, Bill was taking a lot of notes when you were talking. He was writing a lot when you were talking in the last session. I think he wants to talk with you. And so Bill didn't come to me, so I went to him before I started my last session. I went in the chapel at the camp there early, and he was sitting in his chair against the wall, and I pulled up a chair in front of Bill, and I said, Bill, I so humbled that you're here and that I get a chance to speak. And I said, I heard you might want to talk to me. He says, well, I do, but I don't want to offend you. I disagree with your whole premise. He said, you said last night that God is love and we're sinners. He said, no, God's a sinner. And I said, you know, Bill, and he said, put that in your anger file. And he shoved this paper at me. That's what he was writing in that one session. And what do you do? And he listed all of the things that have happened in his life. And I looked at that, I thought, oh, this guy is hurting so badly. I said, but Bill, don't reject the only one who has an answer to this hurt. I said, we all hurt, but Bill, you've been through it. I said, you realize God's not offended in you? He loves you perfectly. I said, you don't even know the one you're angry at. And I said, he's the only one who has the answer for you. And I went ahead and preached. And if I showed you that whole list, you'd think, oh, this guy. And then the camp director said, we had to go up. There were no roads going up. Wintertime, we had to go up on snowmobiles. And he said, we have the sled behind the snowmobile. We've got to get the luggage loaded as quickly as possible to get down to the highway. So I finished, and I was hustling out the back of the chapel through very deep snow in the mountains there. And I turned, and Bill was right behind me. And Bill grabbed me, lifted me right off the ground, gave me a hug. And I said, Bill, I love you, and God does too. He said, I know you do. He gave me this paper. He said, here's my email. I asked someone from that church within this last year, I said, as far as you know, has Bill ever gotten saved? They said, no, not yet. But there's a guy angry at the only one who can help. Personal pain. I could give many, many illustrations. Secondly, let's look down at verse 22. And there was no water, for the congregation had gathered themselves together against Moses and against Aaron. And the people chode with Moses and spake, saying, would God we had died when our brethren died before the Lord. Why have you brought up this congregation into this wilderness that we and our cattle should die here? So second cause of anger here was people pressure. Ever know any pressure from people? The people chode with him, and it wasn't, this word chode doesn't mean that they secretly said, Moses, will you have a minute? I'd like to talk with you privately. They were screaming at him. And there are people who would make coffee nervous. And you all know some. One guy said he knew a guy get aspirin a headache. And there's always people pressure. Maybe it's a mate, maybe it's a child, maybe it's a coworker, maybe it's someone you have to deal with every single day. And you're just boiling inside. People pressure. And maybe that person that God has in your life is there to form that Christ-like character into you, and that shaping of Christ-like character into you. And you begin to look at that. So the cause of anger. Now let's go secondly to the countenance of anger. What does it look like? And we see that God had given clear instruction. Look down here in verse 7. And the Lord spake to Moses, saying, take the rod and gather thou the assembly together, thou and Aaron thy brother. Speak ye unto the rock before their eyes, and it shall give forth his water. And thou shalt bring forth to them water out of the rock, so that thou shalt give the congregation and their beast drink. And Moses took the rod from before him, as the Lord commanded him. And Moses and Aaron gathered the congregation together before the rock. And he said unto them, hear now, ye rebels. Must we fetch water for you out of this rock? Moses lifted up his hand with his rod, and he smote the rock twice, and water came out abundantly, and the congregation drank, and their beast also. What did anger look like? First of all, sarcastic words, sarcasm. Hear now, ye rebels. You know, often when we get into an angry mode, the first thing that get loose is our tongue. And we start getting sarcastic words. That isn't what God told Moses to do. He said, speak to the rock. And Moses lifted the rod and he said, hear now, ye rebels. Ever feel tempted with your child to bring character assassination when you're upset? And you shoot out sarcastic words. It's flesh cutting is what sarcasm is. It's like cutting flesh. Very cutting words. My wife used to always warn me, said, honey, get the facts. Get the facts before you deny all the facts. And we go out with slashing, cutting words, sarcasm, zeros, gutless wonders. And on and on and on and on. That's some of the ways that dads have of cutting. And then self-centered focus. It also looked like, he said, must we fetch you water out of the rock? Not just sarcastic words, self-centered focus. Must we? Since when did Moses ever get water out of a rock? And you know, part of anger is we have been inconvenienced by something dumb someone else did. And so Moses is saying, you made the choice. You're the ones who are a rebel. And I have to deal with this now. What's we? I remember our daughter Tammy was a senior in high school, straight A student, never gave a moment's trouble, and she drove my Ford van. I had a Ford Club Wagon, and she would drive kids to Faith Christian School, pick up the kids around on her way there, so it would be kind of like a carpooling thing. And I had gone over to the dining hall that morning walking, and I noticed that it had rained and frozen, and then snow had fallen on top, and there was a thin layer of snow on top of ice. So I said, Tammy, be very, very careful, because it looks like it's grippy out there, but there's a sheet of ice underneath, so be very careful when you drive. And so then I went ahead and showered, because we had guests on, about 200 guests on campus for a basketball tournament, and I had to speak. We moved our chapel up to 9 o'clock today, so I had to change my morning routine. Then my son Stephen comes running back when I was getting out of the shower and had his book bag on it. He said, Dad, we're in the ditch. I said, where? He said, just around that first bend. And I said, well, I'll get the Bronco. He said, no, not the Bronco, Dad. We are in the ditch. And I said, well, I'll get the payloader. So I went and cranked the payloader and got a logging chain. I put it in the bucket. I went out that old entrance, and I drove up just 200 yards up the road, and the van had very skillfully been planted between some trees. And boy, I was doing a slow burn. Thought of all the brain dead things I have to mess with now. I didn't stutter when I said it was icy. I'm talking to myself now. I didn't stutter. Who can't see that it's icy? Pastor Reed Nelson from Mackinac City Bible Church was there with people for that. I had him. He used to be in our youth group. I said, Reed, go out with me and help me. You can drive the van back when I'll drive the payloader back. Well, I hook onto my Reese hitch, and I took the bucket and hooked the log chain on, and I lifted that. I was going to bring it out like a wheelbarrow, and but her skill was better than mine. I could not extract the way she implanted. I had to cut a tree down, a small popple tree. And I said, Reed, run back and get don't get the saw from the shop. Get my chainsaw. And there's a McCullough in the shop, and you both hind legs come off the ground trying to start that. I said, it doesn't start. I said, get my saw. Well, he came back with that old McCullough. Got part way through, and it quit a little. And so I had an axe in the back, and I said, of all the dumb things I'm going to deal with this morning, this was not in my schedule, and I got it out of there. Pastor Nelson's watching my demonstration. I said, Reed, would you have been able to tell this is icy? Yeah. Well, I get it out. Left front tire was flat. I had to take the wheel off, put another, the spare on. I said, Reed, get that home. I said, I am in time trouble now. I'm in big time trouble. And I said, okay, now, I parked the payloader. I was sweating now. I had my snowmobile suit on, and I parked the loader. I got in the house, and now I had to, why was I upset? Because in 15 minutes, I had to be telling teenagers there that were guests how to live under the control of the Holy Spirit of God. In their life. That's why I was upset. Nay, my Lord. Nay, my Lord. He said, well, you should have had better God night time. I had a good one. And by the way, turn back. If you had a God night time like Moses had that morning, talk to me afterwards. I'd like to hear about it. Look in verse 6. And Moses and Aaron went from the presence of the assembly unto the door of the tabernacle. And they fell on their faces, and the glory of the Lord appeared. That was that morning. the glory of the Lord. Has the glory of the Lord ever filled your kitchen while you were reading? And he had a great God nighttime. The thing is, he could not accept that circumstance. And see, and what Moses, but must we? No, because I thought, if somebody doesn't listen to me, no, it's my problem. See, must we? And the problem is anger sometimes comes because we made ourselves the point and not the principle that is so right. So I got there and I said, honey, did you hear me tell Tammy it was icy? She said, settle down. And she'd said a very convicting thing. She said, you better thank God the only problem Tammy ever caused us, you can pull out with a payloader. And boy, I'll tell you, I got on my knees by my daughter's bed, and that old wicked heart. It wasn't her driving, it was my heart. And I wrote her a love note. Because you get, I'm going to do this, and do, but wait a minute, what about the fruit of the Spirit in that context? Now, by the illustration, you think I lived angry. No, I mean, my wife and I have been married 53 years, so these have been very sparse throughout, but these things did happen. Not with my wife, because we've never had an issue. I mean, literally, I don't know that we ever have had a... of course, she didn't drive much either, so... Tammy never knew what I was going through in my mind till a year later, and she was in the service and I was using this illustration. But I do think when she went in there, she was thinking, where can I live the rest of my senior year? I'm sure that must have been passing through her mind. It's very convicting when we get caught in a moment like that and we realize, you know what? It's got to be made right. And then the third countenance of anger, there was a striking. And he struck the rock. Not just sarcasm, not just self-centered focus, but a literal striking of the rock. And why in our society today, my daughter Tammy now, who works in pediatrics in a hospital, deals with these babies and children who come in from abuse, from angry boyfriends. And she said, I have everything in my power when they come in the room to keep my mouth shut and stay professional. In the nursing portion of that. And there's a striking out. But the sad thing is many times we, in anger, begin to, if we don't strike physically, we strike emotionally. We get involved in abuse. Now, what's the calamity of anger in this context? The calamity of anger is, first of all, it diverted from God's plan. Look in verse 8. God says, speak to the rock. And Moses smote the rock. It diverted from God's plan. Moses speak to the rock. Secondly, it destroyed God's picture. It destroyed God's picture. Would somebody read 1 Corinthians chapter 10 and verse 4? One of you men find it and read 1 Corinthians chapter 10 and verse 4. You hear that last phrase? Three things traveled with Israel through the wilderness. One, the cloud. Two, the pillar of fire. Three, the rock. And that rock was Christ. Now, when water came out the first time, what was Moses told to do? Strike the rock. Now, the second time, God says, do what? The picture is, he is smitten once. And then he is to be spoken to. And Moses, in his prideful arrogance, dishonored God in the presence of the people and destroyed the picture. Because he was to be spoken, and that was no minor instruction. Well, you say got watered both times, yes, but pragmatism is not the right thing. Water came, but you know what happened? Moses lost the blessing of entering Canaan. He got there eventually. We saw him on the Mount of Transfiguration. God let him climb the mountain and see in, but he couldn't go in. Because Moses dishonored God in front of the people. And then it denied God's prize. Look in verse 12. And the Lord spoke to Moses and Aaron, saying, because ye believe me not to sanctify me in the eyes of the children of Israel. In other words, you dishonored me in the presence of the children of Israel. You didn't believe me. Therefore, you shall not bring this congregation into the land which I've given to them. After all this time, they're right there. This is the water of Meribah, because the children of Israel strove with the Lord. And he was sanctified in them, denied the prize. What prize have we been deprived of because of anger? Meeting in Lower Wisconsin, and after the morning service, Pastor said, there's a dentist here who wants to talk to you, and you can use my office. I got in the office, this dentist came in, and he said, I don't know what to do. I've lost my son. My anger. He left home. He said, I was trying to be so perfect and demand such perfection out of him. And he said, my anger drove him. He said, do you think God would understand how sorry I am, and my son would understand how sorry I am if I took my own life? I said, boy, you're talking dumb. But this guy was so broken. He said, my anger literally drove my child out. He couldn't live with my anger. But the dad's pride was so pushy that you've got to be perfect in that image. And I said, you need to take a couple days off from your practice and come up. And I want to spend a couple days. You spend a couple days with us. And he drove up, and we drove and talked and sat and counseled. I said, you have to straighten your thinking out here. Get this right with the Lord, and then if there's a way to contact your son, get it right with him. Some have lost their jobs over anger. Boss said, we don't need that here. Pack your tools. We don't need that. What prize have you been deprived of because of anger? Maybe the prize of a gentle relationship with a person or with a child or with a mate. Maybe you're cutting words with your mate have caused her to just not be able to respond to you. Well, what's the cure for anger as we close here? Well, first of all, face it. Face it. This is I am. This is me. There's four ways we can respond when the Spirit of God convicts. One is repression. We lie to ourselves. I repress it. I lie to myself. I'm fine. Then there's suppression. I lie to others. Somebody comes and says, Les, are you okay? Yeah, I'm fine. You suppress. Or do what Moses did, express. And he expressed it verbally and in striking. But what's God's plan? God's plan is that we confess. It's not repress, suppress, express, but confess. If we confess our sin, he is faithful and just to forgive us our sin and to cleanse us from all unrighteousness. Aren't you glad for the grace and the mercy of God? Amen. Face it. And facing it might mean going back to your mate when you get home. Buy some flowers. Write a note. One man at a conference said, well, if I did that, she'd think I got the idea from that conference. I said, why do you think she paid your way to come? She didn't want you coming back the way you went. Maybe a box of chocolates. If nothing else, just a note, honey, I love you. And it might mean that a man might have to sit down with his family and get them all together tomorrow night and say, you know, God's done a work in my life, not just, but one thing particularly I need to make right with you is my anger. I've not modeled God to you. And I'll tell you what, boy, you can see a revival. Kids are very tender and pliable. I mean, they will put up with a lot. And the minute Dad humbles himself, boy, it's just like a hug-a-bug. Down south, you're more tendency to have hug-a-bugs. I was raised, I'm Finnish by nationality, and us Europeans, they don't have hug-a-bugs. I'd be gone for 6 months, and I'd come home, Dad would say, hello. I mean, that was intimate. Now you get Italians. Mario goes off to camp for 4 days, and the day Mario's coming home, there's big banners, welcome home, Mario. Spaghetti is flying. Everyone in the three-block area is getting kissed and hugged. What's happening? Police come. Mario's coming home from camp. How long's he been gone? 4 days. Give the policeman a big hug. Well, us Finns were more like this. We didn't have hug-a-bugs. But I'm glad the last thing, and I was the last of 9 children born in our living room. I'm glad the last conversation I had with my father. We drove home for Christmas. I told my wife, I said, we need to drive. We drove in a storm, snowstorm for 600 miles, 1,200 mile round trip. And just to spend Christmas Day with Mom and Dad. And I went to Dad before we left. I hugged him and kissed him on the cheek. I said, Dad, I love you. And left. And of course, Mom was always easier to express to Mom. And then we got down to Clovis, New Mexico in a meeting. And my brother Earl called me on Tuesday or Wednesday of that week and said, Dad, less bad news, Dad died. And that was not expected. I didn't go home because I thought Dad was dying, but the Lord must have known that and was prompting me to get back. I'm glad. I leaned against that office wall in that church, and I thought, well, grief, and number two, I'm glad the last thing Dad felt for me was a hug. And the last words he heard from me, I love you. What would be the last words as perhaps a child or a mate would be taken from you? What would be the last words? Would it be, I love you? It's in Knoxville, Tennessee, and the pastor said there's a couple here that wants to talk to you, and I met this couple in the pastor's office, very well-to-do couple. They said, we have a story to tell and we hope you can use it to help others. Said our son was graduating senior and said, very quiet boy, never gave us any trouble. He said, every morning he would come down, Mom would have breakfast and Mom would call and he would come down after getting dressed and ready. And Mom said, I called and no response and called and no response. He said, I went up, the bed was empty. He never got in bed that night. She said, I turned to leave and he had hung himself in the closet. And she screamed and Dad said, he ran up and he found the boy and he took him down and he said he was already cold and stiffening. So I kissed him, said, son, I love you. Too late. He said, what would you tell people so that they'd never have to have this kind of heartbreak? I said, well, number one, hug them while they're still warm. Say, I love you while it can still be felt. Don't fill a funeral parlor with flowers that should be given now. That's true of your mate. That's true of your children. And the first thing you might need to do when you get home tomorrow night is have a great big love fest and a hug fest. And if God's convicted you of things and you need to ask forgiveness to get that conscience right and clear, do it. Because when I've done so many funerals, some would not leave the coffin. You know why? The guilt. The guilt. You can't be gone. Too late then. You still have a maid home. You still have children home. You'd better. How many of you are grandparents? Be fun to be around. We have 10 grandkids and 3 great-grandkids. Be fun to be around. When they come over, they'll say, oh, no, don't touch that. No. And your little granddaughter will pull on Mommy's skirt and say, Mommy, can we leave now? I think Grandpa's off his medicine. Be fun to be with. Pots could be replaced, but broken hearts are very hard to repair. No super glue will do it. Face it, and then we close. Focus on God. He is in control of everything. Secondly, He is conscious of all my needs. And He is concerned about all my concerns. Focus on Him. He is in control. He is conscious of all my needs, and He is concerned about all my needs. What a blessed privilege we have to have the opportunity, and then to come as men, to have our hearts stirred together as men for God's purpose and for God's glory. What an opportunity we have. Well, I can't tell you what a blessing it's been to be with you in this conference. And I pray the things that we've shared, and I know the other speakers, my own heart has been so stirred, that we go back more conformed to the image of Christ and demonstrating that to our mates and children.